So I'm going to be continuing to teach from the Hua Hu Jing, The Unknown Teachings of Lao Tzu. I think this is the third or fourth time I've taught from this. It's actually a Taoist text, and even within the Taoist tradition, it's a little not sure whether it's really an authentic text from Lao Tzu or came later, or anyhow. But I think it's very apropos, and I enjoy teaching from it. So these are various verses. I'm not going to go through the ones I've already commented on. There are a few of them, and I think they're all on the website. Right? Yeah. So this is 10. The ego is a monkey catapulting through the jungle, totally fascinated by the realm of the senses. It swings from one desire to the next, one conflict to the next, one self-centered idea to the next. If you threaten it, it actually fears for its life. Let this monkey go. Let the senses go. Let desires go. Let conflicts go. Let ideas go. Let the fiction of life and death go. Just remain in the center, watching. And then forget you are there. So this is a deep teaching. And it relates a little bit to what we were just talking about. Okay. So ego, you can say many things about ego, but basically we're talking about this sense that all human beings have that somehow they are really me. For example, if my ego would say, Fred is a permanent, solid thing over time and space, right? That's an ego. That's a sense of self that has a permanent, solid identity. Everybody know what they're talking about? Everybody know what their ego is, their sense, their self? So we all have, I won't go into it too much, but we all have this basic subjectivity of that there's something here. But we call it a name, and we give it a history, and we give it a narrative, and we string all the experiences together and say, this is me, this is Fred, right? Right? And then Fred enters the world. Right? So all, now, you're not Fred. So you be you. But your sense of self, of who you are, whatever it is, you're great, you're terrible, this is your history, this is your whole story of yourself. And you enter the world, and the analogy, it's like a monkey catapulting through the jungle. Now, we don't have a lot of monkeys here in Tampa, do we? So they used an analogy that was fairly common to people in India. They'd see monkeys. And what, anybody ever see a monkey? What do? What? They jump around and they respond to everything. Respond to everything. Or if you ever go to a zoo, right? You see monkeys in the zoo. They're they're over here looking out here, and then they're looking over there, and then they're swinging around over there, and somebody gets in their way, they chatter at each other, right? I mean, they're just in a constant state of reactivity, right? So they say the ego is a monkey catapulting through the jungle, or maybe for us, a monkey doesn't make it. How about a puppy? You know, do puppies have any solidity or ground? Or no, they're all over the place, right? They're just reacting to everything, right? They're all, yeah. All right. So we could say that the ego is just like a puppy, right? Just running around all places, tripping over itself, all right? Endlessly. Everybody know what a little, right, okay. Totally fascinated by the realms of the senses. The senses are really our sensory experience. We're always seeing things, we're hearing things, we're smelling things, we're tasting things, we're feeling things, right? The world of our senses. And the self is fascinated by all of that. It's endlessly looking around and, right, just fascinated, you know, entranced by what's going on around it, isn't it? Right? Endlessly. Totally fascinated by the realm of senses. I like the word fascinated. It's like every day we get up and we're just off and running, turn on the computer, fascination. It swings from one desire to the next. Desire is the realm of wanting, needing, big, little, big wants, little wants, big needs, little needs. But if you watch yourself, that's what it's up to all day long. It swings from one desire to the next, one conflict to the next. So some of us may not call it conflict. I think in our world we often call it crises. Anybody ever hear that word? Does anybody notice that for many people life seems to be a series of crises? Right? From, I don't know, from what? From big stuff to little stuff. But crises mean there's a sense of always a little bit of agitation in daily life. And often it leads to conflict. We're in conflict with others. We're in conflict with life. We don't want things to be the way they are. Crises, conflict. One self-centered idea to the next. So all our ideas, all our thoughts, they're all connected. They're not free-floating. All our views, all our ideas, they're not free-floating because they all arise in our mind as mine. My idea, my views, my this, my that. So all our ideas are connected to self. So when all our ideas, our views about everything and anything, right? What are we gonna have for dinner, or where are we gonna go, or what's right, what's wrong, or how people should be, or, you know. They don't just arise as possibilities. They arise as what? Mine. And when we attach I, me, mine to our views and our ideas, right, they enter the world with some sense of self surrounding them, and when they enter the world with I, me, mind attached to them, what do they run into almost immediately? Conflict, because everybody else is doing the same thing. Right? Everybody else, right, unless they've been practicing or developed, they're entering the world also where all their views, all their ideas, all their needs, all their wants are all attached to I, me, mine. So there will always has to be conflict. One conflict to the next, one self-centered idea to the next. If you threaten it, actually fears for its life. So there's a lot of meaning in that. But ego gets threatened if somebody doesn't like it. Have you ever noticed that? It doesn't take much for self to be threatened. The idea that somebody might might not like them. Somebody might not respect them. Right? People may disapprove of them. They might not measure up. Right? All these are stances of self that makes it feel threatened. And so what does it do? It defends itself. So self is always sort of in combat. It's always advancing itself, or it's defensive mode, protecting itself, very busy self. Yeah. So this is, nothing unknown, right? So this is a description, a very ancient traditional description of the world of self. Very busy, very active, always, always up to mischief, right? A never-ending source of needs and wants, a never-ending source of conflicts, crises, difficulties, challenges. Does this sound familiar to anybody? And if you're not willing to admit it's about you, it probably sounds about a lot of people you know. All right? So if we're not ready to get personal, think about your colleagues, your people in your family. That's what they're like. Yeah. Okay. So then it says this very dramatic thing. Right. It doesn't say which many of us do, and it's also good practice. It doesn't say work with it, modify it, right? Examine it, right? Which are all good things to do, right? In our practice, change it, transform it. It doesn't say any of that. It says, just let this monkey go. And we go, could it be that simple? Let this monkey go. What happens when you let it go? When you let your identification, this is how we let it go. We let it go because we let go of identification with it. Because according to Buddhist teaching, it doesn't really exist in any permanent, solid way. It is simply a narrative that we have created. So if you think about your ego self, what is it? It's an idea we have about ourselves. And what else is it made up? Thoughts, right? Try to have a self without a thought. Stories, experiences. So this sense of I, me, mine is not just a I, me, my word alone. It has a lot of power to it because it's got a lot of narrative. It's got a lot of story. It's got a lot of experience. It's got a lot of emotionality. So it's been, you know, it's like, it's like you're an author, right? Or you're a writer, it could be in a short story, right? And you begin with an idea, just a little idea of the character, you know, and sort of the narrative of what it could be. You know, the outline could just be one page. But then you create a 400-page book, right? Because you fill it out, lots of chapters, lots of experiences, right? So it becomes big. But at the beginning, it's just, I mean, what's a book made of? Words. Right. And you might read a book, and you might get very involved in the book, and you may identify with the characters, or you may not, whatever. But at the end of the day, are the characters real? No. They're just made up of words, a fabrication. We call it what? Fiction. We distinguish, don't we, between fiction and nonfiction. So, but we take this sense of self and this identification with self as something very real. It says, let it go. Let the monkey go. Now, what does this mean for those of us who are not ready to let it go? Watch it. Watch it. Watch your crises. Watch your conflicts. Watch your needs. Watch your wants. What's at the source of it? It's very interesting. This is what it means to have an inner life, you see. If we live life on the surface, we just keep going. But to have an inner life means I stop and I examine. And I'm willing to examine sort of just the way I'm living and just the way I'm thinking. And, you know, and I ask myself, in our tradition, we ask ourselves, is it true, whatever I'm thinking? You know, do I really, you remember we talked about what the things we learned on the cushion? Do I really have to move? Right? Is my leg really going to fall off? You know, just a little reality check, you know. Am I in the world of fiction or nonfiction? You know, is my leg going to fall off? Is this pain truly unbearable? Or am I making it unbearable by the way I'm subjectively responding to it? And this can be situations and people. And right, I think in our modern words, we call that drama. Anybody ever hear that word? We create lots of drama. Other people create lots of drama in the unfolding of their life. Let this monkey go, let the senses go, let desires go. The economy would collapse. Because we have an economy based on what? Fulfilling people's desires. And we have a whole industry, right? Marketing, advertising, making sure that what people what? Right, always stay in desire. So it's, yeah. Let desires go. Let the senses go. Let the monkey go. Now, when you say let the senses go, it doesn't mean like shut down, you know. It means let them be free, like I don't know if you saw, I looked out the window earlier, and on the Hong Kong orchid, you know, so many of the flowers have fallen to the ground, and if you look out there, it's just this magical carpet of red, you know, the red flowers. It's just absolutely wonderful. So it's nice to have senses, isn't it? To see. To let it go just allows, means just allow your senses to function naturally in the present moment. You know, when we see things that really touch us, we're present to it, but then we let it go. Right, as we move on to the next thing, we hear sounds, good or bad, we just let them go. We let the senses function naturally. We don't make a big deal about things. Right? When we're eating food, if it tastes good, wonderful. If it tastes not so good, that's okay. You know, just so the freedom is in letting things go, but not like, see, it doesn't mean to avoid them. It doesn't mean to not have them or deny them or repress them. It just means to be very natural. Let the senses function naturally. Let desires go. Again, this is something worth examining. Anybody ever have desire? Yeah, we wake up in the morning, what's the first thing we desire? Coffee. Well, that's interesting, because we have a story that says what? I need coffee. If I don't have coffee, what's going to happen? The world's going to come to an end? What? I'm going back to bed. But it's interesting. You know, is it true? You know, is it true? No, I'm not, I mean, I like to have a cup of tea in the morning, but I also know I'll do fine if I don't have a cup of tea. It's like, freedom. You know, are the stories we tell ourselves really true? Or are they just stories we've told ourselves so long we believe they're true and we never test them? See, it's good to test them. People say, oh, I could never live without that, or I could, right? Anybody talk that way? I'm not talking about my coffee, but lots of, oh, I could never. Well, of course you could. See, there's no freedom. As soon as you say, I can't live without that, there's no freedom. You've given away your freedom. So that's what it means. Let this monkey go. Let the senses go. Let desires go. In other words, you don't have to act on them. We can be very aware in our practice. A desire has arisen in me. This something has arisen, not only as a desire, but it's like a need I must have. And this is what? This is the holiday season, right? I just spent yesterday with my grandchildren. You know, it's like, whew. You know, they have their list. And, you know, and it's like, it's just funny, you know. out of nowhere, you ask them to create a list, right, of things that they want or need, right? And you see very quickly, once it's been written down and they put some energy in, it becomes very absolute, you know, like they must have. And if they don't get it, they'll be very what? Disappointed. But why will we be disappointed? Because the need is not being met, and they created the need. I mean, it's not some universal need for whatever it is they wanted or want. You see, and I'm not saying don't give presents, but it's just interesting. You know. But of course, you really can't give a 9 and 11-year-old this teaching yet. But we can do that. We can experiment. We can watch our minds. Let this monkey go, let the senses go, let desires go, let conflicts go, let ideas go. Now, what does that mean? This is not saying don't have any ideas. You know, ideas can be wonderful. Ideas can be liberating. Ideas can be very helpful to humankind. And ideas can be terrible and harmful, all right? But the idea is they're just ideas. And what's an idea? It's a thought. It's a belief. That's all it is. Let them go means stop grasping at them. Stop holding on to them. Stop going to war for them. Right? I mean, that's the ultimate expression. Stop hating because of our ideas. Hating people who have different ideas. It's crazy. So we have to let go of these things. So this is very powerful. Let ideas go. Let the fiction of life and death go. Well, that's another Dharma talk. So after all this, let this monkey go, let the senses go, let desires go, let conflicts go, let ideas go. Just remain in the center watching. And then it says, and then forget that you were there. So this is very profound, and it really talks about a developmental path of practice. Is that clear? So the first thing is to notice that this mind of ours, everybody just stop, close your eyes, this mind of ours, and whatever that means to you, just look at that. It's like a monkey catapulting through the jungle. It's like a puppy, an untrained puppy, just always, right? You know, what do we say, like monkey see, monkey do? You know, is my mind like that? As I go through the day, whatever's going on in the day, I'm always reacting to it. I'm reacting to what everybody says or doesn't say, or how they look or don't look, or, you know, it's, you know, I listen to news. I'm just in a constant state of reactivity, and I may be in a constant state of neediness or a constant state of desiring, even desiring, you know, things got to be different. I want things to be different. I need things to be different. So the first thing to look at is that really what it's like to be inside me? There's no stability. It's like just monkey, 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 puppy, puppy, puppy. And I'm just totally fascinated by the world I see around me. I'm just, everything my coworkers are doing, every conversation I have with my family, everything I watch on the news, everything that I see on TikTok or whatever it is, I'm always fascinated and reacting to. That's where I'm living my life. You know, some people, you know, are in love with their ideas. Some people just love their ideas. I think they're absolutely brilliant. They might not tell everybody that way, but inside they do. My ideas, my values, my thing, whew, the best. It's too bad everybody doesn't see things the way I do, right? one self-centered idea. Again, it doesn't say idea, it says self-centered idea, that the whatever ideas we have is attached to a sense that they're mine. And everybody, for most case, well, superiority, inferiority complex. We either think our ideas are great, some people think their ideas are terrible, everybody's better than me, but either way, it's all self. So the first thing is let us be aware, and again, many of you have been practicing a long time, some of you are brand new, but do I still have monkey mind? Or am I more like those? So these are like the rhesus monkeys, you know, those ones who's always... Or, you know, I guess all of a sudden I had an image of, you know, like they see those, you know, like the great apes. They're just kind of sitting there, you know, chewing on their leaves, you know, just... Mostly the monkeys always chattering around, swinging around, always frenetic. So, do I have the monkey mind? Does it just swing around? Desire, conflict, self-centered idea. Okay. So, let the monkey go. Which means, if you stop feeding it, like, you know, like an animal, if you stop feeding it, what's it going to do? It's going to go fine. It's going to go. Well, it's going to go, you know, if like a feral dog or cat, you know, or stop feeding him. Do I feed myself, my sense of self, my ego? Am I feeding it all day? To let it go means it doesn't mean it's not going to keep trying to get our intention. But it means I'm mindful. That's what I was saying earlier, you know, this basic mindfulness and self-awareness is so important because it allows me to know, oh, that's what's going on. Self is just wanting something. Self is just telling a story that it needs something. Can't be happy unless I get what? Unless I get this need met, unless I get this desire met, I'll never be happy. Unless I find this relationship, unless I get the right job, and you know, whatever it is, you know. Unless I get this thing for Christmas, you know. Can you feel there's no freedom in that? There's like dependency. We want to be free. Let this monkey go. Let the senses go. In other words, have a full range of senses, but just let them be. Don't hold on to them. Don't grab. Don't keep repeating. Don't, I like this, I don't like that. Just, you know, just be open to your sensory experience. Let desires go. Let them arise if they arise on their own. In most cases, they arise on their own. It's not like you sit down and go, you don't wake up in the morning and go, let me write out my list of desires today. Right? It's not like that. They just happen. They just arise. And we react to them. We jump on them like, I got to do this. Let them go. Conflict is when we're in conflict with people, when we're in conflict with life, when we're in conflict with ourselves, there's an unwillingness to accept. To accept. So there's conflict. When we open to the world of acceptance, when we open to the world of understanding, then really the conflict in your life will become very minimal. When we accept ourselves, there won't be conflict with ourselves. When we accept others for who they are, there won't be such conflict. Conflict is when we can't accept. One side wants to change the other side. Conflict. Let ideas go. What does that mean, let ideas go? Ideas come and go. You know, you sit in meditation, what do you notice about your thoughts? Does like one thought come up like and stay there the whole 30 minutes? Is that your experience? What's your experience when you sit in meditation? What? They come and go. Thoughts come and go. Ideas come and go. Stories come and go. What does that tell you about the nature of this mind? Things are just coming and going. That is their natural way. But what do we do? What do we do? What? We grasp at them. We hold on to them. We embroider them. We give them a great importance. And we're off. Off and running. Lost in this story. Then we're lost in that story. Then we bring ourselves back and off. We're off and running again. And, you know, a lot of it is just idle chatter. But a lot of it has an emotional quality to it, which then stirs us up, agitates us. You know, a lot of time people, you know, and especially in our society, we have problems with restlessness, right? And we have problem with boredom. Does that sound like anything anybody knows? Right? So a lot of people have kind of an innate restless. They got to always keep moving. When things stop, their foot goes like this or something. You know, it's like, you know, they feel this kind of energy. Or even for many people, even just sitting right in meditation is hard because there's a restlessness inside. I want to move. I want to do something. On the other hand, there's this thing of like boredom. This is boring. Like there's nothing going on. Right? There's no conflict. There's no crisis. There's no sensory stimulation. Right? You see? So people sit down in meditation. They go, this is boring. So, which is also what my grandchildren say about meditation. Boring. Crave stimulation. Learning to sit in calmness, learning to sit in well-being, having an inner sense of well-being, of calmness, of peacefulness. We're not as knocked off our center. If we don't have a center, then we're always getting knocked off. Right? But if we have a center, we don't get blown away. You know, with those, speaking of Christmas, they probably don't have them anymore. When I was a kid, boys, they gave us these Joe Palooka things. Anybody know what those are? They were these kind of big life-size blow-up things. Joe Palooka was he a comic or something? He was a boxer, Joe Palooka. So, you know, they give it to boys. I remember having one. So you get a Joe Palooka figure. It's as big as you or even bigger than you. It's plastic and it's filled with air. And the bottom is sand, right? So it's got, so, you know, you just keep hitting it. And it goes over, and then it comes back up, and you hit it again. Okay? I don't know if that's it. Well, I'm not using the one who's hitting as example. I'm using Joe Palooka as example. And he went down, he came back up. You know, he didn't have any ego. I mean, I was like, you know, no sense of self. It's like, yeah, you know, if you wanna spend time doing this. Seems like a waste of time, but I'm here. I'll take it. Right? You know. And then, you know, when you're done hitting it, it's still there. Again, I'm not, for those of you going, no, I don't want to be just people hitting me. No, so I'm not saying that. I'm talking just about a way of being in the world. Dealing with situations, dealing with conflicts without, you know, there's a resiliency. How about that? Is that a better word? There's a resiliency. You know, we always land on our feet. We always know everything's okay. We always know how to take care of ourselves. We always know there's a solution. Just life. Just remain in the center watching. So that's our mindfulness, that's our examination, that's our ability, that we learn on the cushion in daily life, that we can go through life with a certain degree of observation, witnessing, right, objectivity. It's not all, if the response to life is always from the point of view of self, there's always going to be conflict, there's always going to be grasping, there's always going to be a lot of emotionality. That's just the way that kind of life lives. But when there's observation, when you know what's going on, I know, I can see this person clearly, I can see what's arising within me in reaction to this person, you know, and I can just hold that. I don't need to react. I don't need to do anything. I can observe myself. I can observe others internally, externally. And then the freedom is, one, not reacting, like what is your question. The freedom is inside not having to react. But two, I can choose how I want to respond to the situation. You know, am I going to respond from the world of self and I, me, my? Am I going to respond from perhaps some compassion or understanding of who this other person is and what their needs or wants are, or their history? Am I going to respond with intelligence and wisdom, compassion? I mean, you see, there's, when you have objectivity, there's space. Life is not right up in your face and you always have to respond. That's what I'm saying. Learning to deal with your own physical discomfort in meditation is a wonderful skill because you learn, I don't need to move every time I feel uncomfortable. So you're developing a skill. You know, I don't have to go to the fridge every time something inside tells me I'm hungry and I need something. I mean, where's the freedom in that? Just remain in the center, watching, mindful, aware, observant, objective, and then forget that you were there. That's like the next step. Or examine, is there really a thing that's observing? That's a greater degree of freedom, but we'll just put that one on the side. Questions? So this is, you know, it's wonderful to hear these wonderful teachings, are very inspiring. But, you know, what do they really mean? And most importantly, how do I really practice them in the reality of life? Questions. So online, people just chat in, and Didi will call that, say down. And in the hall, just raise your hand, and who's got the mic? We'll bring it to you. So Didi got her hand right up there first. Yes, Didi.
Okay, this mic isn't working, so I'll just try to project. Or can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. All right, so Adele is asking, what is the value of memoirs, such as the life stories of great teachers, such as Thich Nhat Hanh, and also of ordinary people's lives or spiritual journeys?
So I think maybe behind the question is, based on what I said, so it's like all is all awareness of one story and can it be helpful? And obviously the answer is what?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, it can be helpful, right? So in our tradition, to read the lives of the great practitioners, right, it's very inspiring. How they practice, things they dealt with, how they dealt with those things. Yeah, very inspiring. The same way memoirs can be very helpful, right? Oh, well, you know, it gives you some identification of the things that people go through and how they dealt with them. Okay, so we're not talking about how things appear in the external world, you see. We're talking about how we live our life and how we relate to life inwardly. So, Thich Nhat Hanh, I believe he would say this, Thich Nhat Hanh can share stories of his life, things that he's done, things that have happened. But he knows they're just stories, and there's no central Thich Nhat Hanh that has been there from childhood that owns that. They're just stories of what's happened. Just stories of what's happened. When we identify that story with a self, then it's a very different situation. You can think you're quite wonderful. You know, many people carry around stories of their life and the things that have happened to them that cause them great suffering, even decades later. Is that helpful to carry those stories of things that have happened and are no longer happening? I think it's something worth examining, especially if one wants to be happy, if one wants to be free. In Buddhist teaching, Zen teaching, Dzogchen teaching, the only reality is now, right? I mean, what does that mean? Past has gone. Anybody ever hear that? Actually, there's a nice one here. Let me find it. Which one is it? See, I was going to share that today, but now I'll just do it. Each moment is fragile and fleeting. The moment of the past cannot be kept, however beautiful or terrible. I'm adding that. The moment of the present cannot be held on to, however enjoyable or terrible. The moment of the future cannot be caught, however desirable or undesirable. But the mind is desperate to fix the river in place. Possessed by the ideas of the past, preoccupied with image of the future, it overlooks the plain truth of the moment. So we say these things, but do we really get the import? Even when you're telling somebody the story, you're telling them the story when? Now. And if you're telling them a story about anything that happened to you earlier today or early in your life, it's about something that no longer exists. Is that true? I mean, that's what this means. And we hear it all the time. Oh, yeah, the past doesn't exist, the future doesn't exist, all there is the present, blah, blah, blah. I would ask you to examine that. It has profound implications. The past does not exist, other than just these stories, memories that we carry in our mind, that you can't find in any substantial way. They're just stories. Is that true? It's worth it. See, when you get these teachings, examine them, reflect on them. Is this true? And if it's true, what are the implications of that? The way my mind works. Am I endlessly going over the past and regurgitating the past? Am I endlessly, you know, thinking about the future, planning, worrying, fantasizing? You know, it's like, where's that all going on? Take a guess. In reality? Okay, I want everybody at home and in the hall to do this very simple act, okay? I want you to turn around and just look behind you, all right? Now, does anybody see anything called the past following them? You see? Then look forward. Do you see anything called the future? No, wherever you look, all you see is what? Now. And this is not some kind of spiritual, you know, maxim. Some sort of new agey kind of, you know, feel good saying. It's the truth. And if it's true, then what are the implications of that for the way my mind operates? Now, why is that worth looking into? Any guess why that's worth looking into, examining, reflecting on? If we want to be happy, if we want to be free, if we want to be you know, someone in control of this ship. you know, that we're writing in this life. But if we have a monkey mind, remember monkey mind? Goes wherever it wants. Wants to go in the past, dredge up some miserable story that we've probably thought about a million times already. Let's dredge it up again and be miserable. If we're aware, we know that when it arises. And we let it go. Same way with our endless planning, fantasizing. Same way with our needs and our wants. Yeah, we're aware. Question?
Yeah.
It's all right.
So I'm just wondering, what to do for anxiety, because I feel like that gets me out of my body. And so yesterday we were doing stuff like within our body, and I was even reflecting, like, oftentimes, like, how do I ground myself when, like, the coping mechanism is to unground yourself? I don't know if you have any advice for that.
What?
If that makes sense. Because with anxiety, it's like...
So what
you,
do you...
Yeah.
Are you... You're anxious. So, again, anxiety is a whole big field. I was a mental health person, so, and I'm sure you know a lot about it, too. But anxiety is all about the future. Anxiety is all future thinking. Right? You never have anxiety about the past. And you really don't have anxiety about the present. Because even if you're in the present and you're anxious, it's because you're worrying what's going to happen next and whether you can deal with it. Is that true?
Yeah, I guess more so, how do I calm my anxiety without, like, adding more thoughts to it? Because intellectualize it. That's what I'm trying to get at.
But I guess what I'm saying two things to you. If you want to go a little deeper, you know, in Buddhism, we want to get at cause. Now, we can use all kinds of techniques to calm, to stabilize, right? Which is what you're talking about, and that's helpful, right? But if you said to me, I have a chronic lung condition, can you help me with it? And then I asked you some questions and you told me you smoke 2 packs a day, I might say to you, well, why don't we talk about the cause rather than, you know what I mean? Like, perhaps stopping smoking could take care of it. So I'm just suggesting to you to really look at how much of your mind is occupied by anticipating, thinking about the future and what could happen and how you could not deal with it. Or, you know what I mean? It's like, right? So to me, anxiety is really about this fantasizing about the future, but kind of elevating what's going to happen to, like, big. At the same time, you're undervaluing your capacity to deal with things. Okay? So bring up him and his ability to deal with the present moment. Anything you're worrying about that could happen is only going to happen in the present moment, because that's all there is. Is that clear?
Thank you.
It's just going to happen here. Can you deal with here? I mean, how are you doing so far today? Are you dealing with this since you've been here for almost 2 hours? How are you doing?
Yeah, a lot better than I was in the past.
Because what? It's still the same. Nothing's changed out here. What's
just
changed?
Practicing more and taking it into daily life.
Well, practice. No, you're changing. Your idea about what was going to be going on here, whether it was a threat to you or whether you could handle it, perhaps that is no longer there. That's the source of your anxiety. Reality is not the source of your anxiety. It's your ideas about reality and yourself. So when you acknowledge, how old are you?
24.
I mean, have you ever dealt with anything in your life?
Yeah.
Oh, you have? I mean, has your life just been a total picnic and you've just kind of floated through and everything's been wonderful?
No.
You've had any challenges in life? Difficulties in life? Did you deal with them?
As best I could.
Yeah. As best you could? Yeah, I'm not saying you're the pro, but have you dealt with them? Yeah. What does that tell you? See, I don't even know you, but what does that tell you? That you're somebody who can what?
Is capable of new things when they arise.
Yeah. And if you blow it, right? And everybody ever blow it in life? And if you blow it, then what? Remember Joe Palooka? You just got knocked down, It's not easy getting beaten up by a six-year-old, but, he doesn't have a big ego. He just gets back up. Then there's no anxiety about life. There's no fear. Do you know what's going to happen to you the rest of the day?
I could guess. I could try
to. I'm not asking you. I'm asking you, do you know what's going to happen to you?
I think I do, but I don't.
Can you give me a clear answer? Do you know what's going to happen, unfold, how your day is going to unfold?
No.
You don't? Are you terrified?
A little bit.
But what if you accepted the reality that even though we think we know what's going to happen, we have no idea how our day is going to unfold?
Okay.
Could that possibly be?
I'll try it and see.
But that's what's going to happen anyhow.
Yeah.
Life's just going to happen. And all you got to do is show up. And the more stable and clear-headed you are, everything will be fine. Is that clear?
Yeah.
I mean, if you walk out of here and all your tires are flat, okay? That's a fact. What are you going to do? Fall apart?
Deal with it.
Deal with it. And where are you going to deal with it? In the past, present, or future?
In the present, right?
In the present. When you'll go out there, you'll see it, and you'll do something. I mean, that's life, right? I mean, would it be more pleasant if you go out there and all your tires are, it would be more pleasant. I mean, it doesn't deny, but it's all right. I mean, let's say you go out there and somebody stole your car. What are you going to do? Anybody ever there walk outside and all of a sudden your car is not there? What do you do? Call the cops. I mean, it's like, What? Call your insurance company. Yeah, take care of business. It's not the end of the world. How many times do we tell ourselves if this happens, it's like the end of the world? We get ourselves all riled up. I mean, there are like Armageddon kind of sects that tell everybody the end of the world is coming. And here we are. So don't be like that. And with that, I think we need to stop. Thank you, everyone.